When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy is effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel
blah, blah, blah. Cool song! Welcome to the Bechdel cast!
Hi!
Yay! My name's Jamie.
My name's Caitlin.
And this is our second Seattle Live episode of the Bechdel cast! Welcome! A lot of familiar faces. Thank you. I changed velvet suits because I care. And I just have many velvet suits. Got to get airtime for all of them on our audio podcast.
I'm in the same outfit, so.
I'm in the same Crocs. So we all, choices were made
sure.
This night.
Indeed.
Well, welcome to the show.
Yes, welcome. Clap if you are a listener of the Bechdel cast.
Is there anyone here who came with a friend and hasn't heard the show before? Okay, we got one.
A shaking hand rose in the audience. This is, okay, so Caitlin and I, when we go to do live shows in various cities, we have so far never done a movie that takes place in the city. In fact, we always do movies that take place in the absolute wrong city. And people are, how you say, angry about this when we do this. Did Princess Diaries in New York. That's a movie about San Francisco.
Correct. We did, in San Francisco, we did The Breakfast Club. Takes place in a suburb of Chicago.
I think the easiest way to get us to do the correct movie in the correct city is to put the name of the city in the title.
Yes.
Although we could have done this movie in New York. So it's Sleepless in Seattle is the name of the movie we're doing.
Yeah. By a round of applause, who has seen the movie?
And which Seattleite is that, right?
Ooh.
That's fun to say. Which Seattleite is the holdout and has not seen Sleepless in Seattle? We've got some edgelords in the crowd. I love it. When you think about it, Caitlin, and I feel like I'm about to really polarize the audience, but when you think about it, canonically, is Seattle a spinoff of Boston? Because Cheers,
I wish not
Frasier.
To comment.
Okay. Oh. That's what I'm. I don't mean like culturally. Jesus. I mean, Frasier spun off Cheers. Seattle spun off Boston. It's canon.
I see.
That's just my hot take for the evening.
Well, I'm sure we'll talk about this, but despite this movie taking place, at least partly in Seattle, this movie barely is about Seattle. Like it,
she seems to be mostly sleepless in Baltimore and New York.
Yeah.
Shall we bring out our guest?
Yes, we should.
Yes,
our guest is awesome. She is a local Seattle comedian. She runs a weekly show at this very space, The Rendezvous, called Comedy Nest, and she recently opened for Cameron Esposito. Give it up for Andy Iwanceo. Iwanceo.
Welcome.
Hi, thanks for being here.
To make it very, you actually have to pass a test to begin speaking.
I thought you were going to like ask me to play the piano.
It's kind of a Billy Joel situation here.
Suddenly a piano is wheeled up and you're like, we're going to see if you're on the podcast.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Tell us about your history and your relationship with Sleepless in Seattle.
Historically, I've lived in Baltimore as well as Seattle.
Okay.
And is this a biopic?
Kind of. It kind of works out if you think about it as gender.
Great.
But the other way. Anyway. I worked on the harbor right where she like sulks on a bench for most of the movie.
Sure.
Romantically. Yes.
Stalkingly.
It's one of the postcards she stares at.
Wow. Okay.
And then I worked on a ferry that went around that harbor. And so you'd give like a fake tour to people to get tips. Mm-hmm. And so they had installed these lampposts that weren't really ever there.
Wait, they installed them for the movie?
Yeah, they installed them. They're in the movie. You can see them. They look old-timey and stuff.
But whenever people have budgets, they just do, like, fucked up random things for no...
When they were shooting The Wire in Baltimore, they actually had to install dilapidated houses. Because, like, not all the neighborhoods had them, or, like, they created bus stops. It was pretty hilarious. They did everything the city couldn't do. But my partner pointed out that he worked on the same ferry, and then he was working on some pirate ship that went around Seattle's harbor, and then he realized he spent most of his summer pointing out the house from Sleepless in Seattle.
No!
Harbor, so he's really got the connection.
Wow.
Impressive.
And wild.
I sleep next to him, so that's like contacts.
Yeah, that's the transitive property.
Yeah.
Like next to someone who has the info, you also have the info.
That's how it works. We're both trans, so we just, it just happens. It's like a Voltron of ambiguities.
Well, to bring up the Fight Club episode, which we recently did, it's like, Tyler knows this, so I know this.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
When did you first see Sleepless in Seattle?
I honestly seen bits and pieces of it at like family gatherings for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It wasn't until I like really sat down to watch it a couple weeks ago that I really like sat through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was very interesting.
You're not wrong.
I have no notes for this. All right, Caitlin, what's your history with
me? I had never seen it. sorry, I can feel myself getting sick currently.
That's my fault. And also, I'm better.
Oh, no. I had never seen this movie before until like a week ago when we started prepping for this tour. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not the type of movie that I would ever seek out. Our friend Catherine.
Savage.
I know, I'm so sorry. Yes. Our friend Catherine, who I watch a lot of movies with, had been trying to get me to watch this movie for like a year. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, I was like making her watch Paddington and stuff. And I kept refusing, but I did often posit theories as to what the movie might be about. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, it's about how Meg Ryan owns a bookstore in Seattle and Tom Hanks owns a bigger bookstore called Amazon. And they are fighting about it, but then they start emailing and they fall in love over email.
Wrong one!
Well, I know that now. Because I had also never seen You've Got Mail, and Catherine was always trying to get me to watch that.
But it should be called You've Got Email. That's my only note for that movie.
Otherwise, perfect piece
Otherwise,
of cinema.
Feminist text. Mm-hmm.
What's your history with Sleepless in Seattle?
I kept, sort of came to this movie in a bizarre reverse way. Before I saw any of Nora Ephron's movies, I saw the documentary about her, the Everything is Copy documentary, which was really good. And she's like a fascinating figure with some serious blind spots. But I first like became interested in Nora Ephron and then went back maybe about a year or two ago and like started watching back all of her movies. We did When Harry Met Sally on the podcast. So I had to watch it then. And I watched Sleepless in Seattle for the first time maybe a year or two ago and was like, oh no, you know, because I very much love Nora Ephron, and yet this movie, oh no, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it was weird because it was like falling in love with an artist and then 2 days later being like, what have you done to me? It was a real fling I had with Nora Ephron, and she let me down almost immediately.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. You know, she's dead, so.
Oh. Rest in power.
So I showed her. I'm alive.
Oh, okay. That's one way to look
Got
at
her.
It. Okay, well.
This is now the roast of Nora Ephron.
Is this a normal part of the show where you say whether or not you've beaten somebody by living longer than them?
No, but it's now a part of the show where I roast everyone who can't roast me back because I'm a coward. I'm still somewhat of a Nora Ephron stan, and I like a lot of what she represents, and she did pave a lot of paths for future female writers and filmmakers, and I don't want to disc... I mean, I have a whole thing, but I love Nora Ephron. This movie is yikes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump in with the recap, shall we?
Yes.
Okay, so this movie starts out basically the same exact way that the movie The Rock starts out, because...
It's
Tom Hanks staring at a gravestone that might as well say his wife, because she has just died.
And he's more much like The Rock when Ed Harris, he's sort of yelling at the gravestone.
Yeah.
Why do these men yell at the gravestones of their recently deceased? In Ed Harris's case, it's raining heavily, so he's yelling through the weather. To the grave.
Sure.
This is where you can start the drinking game of, like, if you take a shot every time you see something famous that should be on a postcard. Like, the entire movie is just shots of stuff. Even Chicago seems to raise up like it's trying to check out what's happening. Like, the buildings come up over the hill like, what? Who died?
Hello?
Go away, Sears Tower.
Right. The movie
I'm having a moment here.
There's this weird reveal that doesn't need to happen where it seems like they're in like just a grassy rural graveyard, and then there's like a tilt that's like, wait a minute, they're near a city, and it's like, who
Did
cares?
You know, people in cities aren't supposed to die. They were like, wait a second, so in this universe, people who live in cities die.
It's almost like, well, there's two ways we can do it. We could just put Chicago at the bottom of the screen. No, that's not good enough. It needs to tilt in the entire skyline up here, like a musical number from Chicago.
A full-on Dutch angle. They do introduce it basically like Tom Hanks is like, so, to recap, my wife is dead. And the kid's like, why? And he's like, that just happens sometimes. And the kid's like, oh, thank you. And that's the first scene.
Yes.
Why are they yelling?
I don't know. But Tom Hanks spends almost the rest of the movie yelling still.
Yes. He's a... America's sweethearts are really fucking creepy and mean in this movie.
So his wife has just died of cancer, and he is heartbroken because they were very much in
heartbroken.
Love.
Heartbroken, yeah.
And he decides that he needs a change of scenery because everything in Chicago reminds him of his wife.
Which, and again, it's another famous part of Chicago.
Right.
It's another. It's them going into Wrigley Stadium.
Yeah.
It's just another postcard that reminds
Oprah's
him of his
throwing
wife.
A pitch. Like, you're like, why is this happening?
So he takes his young son, Jonah. And they moved to Seattle. Mm-hmm. Ever heard of it?
The cast member of Frasier in this movie lives in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Which is, but then here's my theory. They heard David Hyde Pierce say, utter the word Seattle, and they're like, now hold on a second. We've got to get this guy in a Seattle-based piece of media.
Sure.
And that's why he won all those Emmys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good theory.
Thank you.
Okay. So we cut to 18 months later. We are in Baltimore. We meet Annie. That's Meg Ryan's character. Also, Tom Hanks is, his character's name is Sam. So
we're probably
going
to call him Tom Hanks.
Right. So Annie, a.k.a. Meg Ryan, has just gotten engaged to Walter. That's Bill Pullman.
Bill Pullman.
Mm-hmm. But he is a dweeb who is allergic to everything. So
which
we don't like him.
We can get into this Nora Ephron school of man who is addicted to you and faithful to you above all others, yet he has an allergy, is repulsive.
Oh no, he's into aromatherapy. Dear Lord, our bedroom is so moist at night and comfortable. It smells like lavender. I need to divorce this man.
This sexy man who doesn't care when I'm essentially cheating on him.
She is driving in her car and she's flipping through the radio and she hears a
also
kid.
Yelling.
She's yelling?
She's yelling at the radio.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, better change the channel. Like, what is... Who is the sound guy on this
movie? Oh, there's no rhythm in this movie. If you like watch the Christmas Carol, because I was literally watching it before it came here, and she does not sound like she's ever sang a Christmas Carol before. It is
right, she's
terrible.
Like, and jingle bells.
Tone deaf, Meg Ryan.
Well, if she's yelling at radio, she's kind of like us. Like, we're always, you know, criticizing media. So
No, she sucks in this movie, though. And we're cool and good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's driving in a car. She is listening to the radio, and she hears a kid call into a radio show, this kid being Jonah, Sam's son, and he speaks with Dr. Marsha, who's like an advice radio host person, mm-hmm. and he's like, my Christmas wish is for my dad to have a new...
His wife.
So then Jonah puts his dad on the phone and they talk to Dr. Marsha about his wife.
Yeah, but then also like Tom Hanks is back and forth in this movie and like he's either very endearing on the radio or yelling at his son on the radio.
Yeah.
Which is like, read the room, dumbass. Like, why are you yelling at your son on national radio?
It doesn't stop like 2,000 women from being like, he seems like the greatest guy in the world.
I mean, speaks to their judgment of character because Jesus Christ, he is yelling at his son the whole movie.
I'm going to kick your teeth in. He's so dreamy.
So he's talking to the lady and he's like, I can't sleep at night. I'm sleepless. I live in Seattle. And that's where we get the
genius
name of this movie.
Dr. Marsha.
Annie, who is listening, is like, wow, this guy seems nice.
She's like, wow! She's yelling.
She almost wrecks her car.
She says like 3 or 4 words at the same time as him.
Yeah.
And she thinks it's kismet.
This whole movie is like, is love connected to the power of coincidence? And that is, I'm just like, no.
It's much in the same way that, like, it's the least common denominator of things happening in the world. It's like if you pick up a paperclip and you think somewhere else in the world somebody's picking up a paperclip, and I'm like, I'm supposed to be with that person. It's just such a low bar for connection in the world.
It's like Meg Ryan, if you want to break up with Bill Pullman, many people would be honored to have him. So just break up with him. Don't go through this insane... Oh, God. I can't wait to apply the Buscemi test to this movie. Although in this case, it's a female character, so I'm going to call it the Stevia Buscemi test.
Stevie is still a woman's name, so you could be this. It could just be the Stevie Buscemi
Stevie,
test.
Oh, Stevie Buscemi. Well, I yeah. like Stevia because it's a what is it? It's a sugar substitute.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Okay.
I don't know. It might be poison. Who knows?
So she's like, yeah, this guy seems great. And then she goes into a diner and they're all like, wow, he seems great. And then there are like many women calling into the radio show and they're like, wow, he seems great. And then she gets very emotionally invested in this story, his story, which is not interesting. It's like pretty normal.
He's a grieving husband who is not dealing with it well via screaming at his son all the time. So not inspiring, actually quite sad. And someone should call and be like, should we check in on the son? Like,
right.
I feel like if you play the movie Big before this, it feels like a weird sequel to that movie.
Love this theory.
And then, like, except for the Zoltar things, kind of like, make sure my dad meets someone else he can kiss.
This is a perfect fan theory. And Meg Ryan has one of the only jobs women are allowed to have in this genre, which is journalist.
Mm-hmm. So she goes to work with her friend and colleague, Becky, played by Rosie O'Donnell. Woo-hoo. And everyone's like, you should turn this into a story. This is interesting.
I'm like,
and
is nothing happening in Baltimore right now?
So she's like, yeah, this guy seems great. I'm going to write a story about him. And then meanwhile, Sam gets a bunch of letters from horny women who have heard his story and want to be his wife.
Yep.
And he's not interested in any of them. So then Annie goes to her brother, Niles Crane, a.k.a. David Hyde Pierce.
There's not really much to talk about Niles' character, so I'll just say it here. Mm-hmm. This character's office that she goes into at some point, what is his job? Because there's so many wild things in his office while he's like, love is a construct. But there's an oversized typewriter. What else is there?
There's a piano and a harp.
There's a large harp.
There's a gramophone. There's a gramophone. On one side. Like, I mean, that most of the time when you have David Hyde Pierce in a movie or TV show, you just want him flustered in front of antiques.
And this movie delivers on every level. David Hyde Pierce is in just a room full of central casting antiques.
Annie's all like, I'm having these fantasies about this guy who lives in Seattle who I've never met. I'm like questioning whether or not I want to marry Bill Pullman. And Niles is just like, do whatever you want. Love is a lie. And she's like, okay, you're right. I just have cold feet and I'm going to move on.
But the fact that he's like, love is a lie. And she's like, okay, I will get married. Like,
meanwhile, Sam is talking to his friend. I think his name is Jay, Rob Reiner. Mm-hmm. And Rob Reiner is encouraging him to like get back out into the dating sphere.
They talk about butts.
Yeah.
They talk about butts.
He's like, you've got a nice butt, Tom Hanks. And
Tom Hanks is like, I know.
And they're talking about dating and how, like, you know, Sam should get back out there, but it's been so long since he's dated. He doesn't know this, like, changing landscape. And then Rob Reiner's like, well, there's this decorator woman, Victoria. You should ask her out. Mm-hmm. So he does. Meanwhile, this is where it gets really fun. Annie starts to cyber stalk and then really stalk Sam.
Which is 10 times as hard to do. In 1993.
Yes. The cyber There's stalking especially.
A lot of large hardware in this movie.
I will say there's more female hacking in this movie.
Yes!
Than most movies in the 90s.
There is,
and,
yeah.
And nobody says, I'm in.
No. Which I was going to say, representation-wise, is piss poor for the hackers.
she needs to say, I'm in.
She dares. Well, she's in, is she not? That's You're a right. consent thing. You gotta say it.
Okay.
First of all, hackers should have to say to computers, may I enter? And if the computer enthusiastically consents, they can say, I'm in.
Well, it was like print yes or enter factors. Exactly. I think we've all met somebody off of Craigslist and gone, what's your factors?
So Annie is like, I can't get this guy out of my mind. And she writes him a letter to both Sam and Jonah. And she's like, hey, let's meet on Valentine's Day in New York City at the Empire State Building on the top of it.
She proposes the third act of the movie. Yeah.
Yes. And then Jonah reads the letter and he's like, wow, I really like the sound of her. But Sam is like...
Well, but Rosie O'Donnell sends it. Meg Ryan's like, I'm not going to send it.
Right.
Because it's scary, right? We've all written a scary letter and then not sent it. That's relatable. I've done that many times.
Absolutely. That's the whole premise of To All the Boys I've Loved Before. So...
Everyone's written a scary letter and then read it back and then been like, hold on. Have I become a person I hate? But Rosie O'Donnell sends it.
Rosie O'Donnell sends it, and then Sam reads it, but he dismisses her as a romantic option because she lives in Baltimore and it's too far away from Seattle.
Out of all the many examples there are to reject her as a romantic option in that letter, he chooses distance.
Well, he doesn't know that she is stalking him, which she starts to really double down on because, first of all, she hires a detective...
Yeah. A very unsubtle detective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To like take photos of him and like spy on him on his date with Victoria. So Sam starts dating Victoria, which upsets Jonah because he's all about, you're new, his wife should be Annie.
This and random lady who I read a terrifying letter from. Like the Buscemi test. Oh my God. Oh, but and also the reason we're not supposed to like Victoria is because she laughs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
She has a sense of humor.
She's too expressive, and Jonah likes his mothers. Silent and Meg Ryan.
Again, when you see the private detective like lean over the balcony at them, and he's like zooming in, the camera is so loud. It sounds like a car backing up. It's like...
And also that shot zooming in, Tom Hanks is acting wild on this first day. He's like moving his head around. I was like, what are you talking about? And then he feeds her, which you're like, okay. Setting a weird precedent for this relationship.
Everything about that reads like a child in a man's body.
Yeah.
Yes. Right, he wouldn't know how to act on a date with a grown woman. Yeah, oh, this is a good theory.
If someone tried to fade me on a first date, I would commit arson. Be very upset.
So meanwhile, Annie's like, well, if I'm going to write this story that I think is interesting, I better go to Seattle. So she
uses funding from work?
I guess.
Oh, my God.
And then she's getting off... her plane at the airport, just as coincidentally, Sam is seeing off Victoria for a trip that she's going on. And so Sam sees Annie and he's like, hubba, hubba, who is that? And then Annie proceeds to follow him to the beach, follow him to another beach, spy on him, lurk around,
stand in the
go
street.
To his house. She has found out his address.
Yes.
She goes to his house and then sees him like playing with his son. And then she's like, what a nice guy. I love him.
She's too far away to see that Tom Hanks is probably yelling at his son while they play.
That's what's making the boat go.
And then they do come face to face and they say hello to each other. But she has just seen him be really excited to see his friend Susie, played by Rita Wilson, Tom Hanks's real life, his wife.
Yeah.
And then...
His sister? No, I'm not saying his wife is his sister. Oh, my God. Isn't Susie supposed to be his sister?
I thought,
or maybe just friends?
I think it's supposed to be his sister.
I think it's supposed to be his sister.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't realize that.
And that's why it's like double ridiculous when it's like, you thought his sister was his wife?
But it also, like, he does hug her like it's his wife.
Yeah. And that's why Annie is confused. So she's like, oh, man, he's got a girlfriend. I'm just going to go back to Baltimore and forget all about this sleepless in Seattle. But then Jonah buys a flight to New York.
With the help of tiny Gabby Hoffman.
Mm-hmm. And he goes to the Empire State Building to look for Annie and like waits around. And then Sam realizes that his son is missing because he's a bad father and does not keep track
of him.
He's
like, I'm yelling and no one is crying. Where is my son?
This is how I find out if my son's home. You've let me down!
That's son sonar.
So he goes chasing after him, goes to New York City. Meanwhile, Annie and Walter are having like Valentine's dinner, and she's just like, we got to break up because you have allergies. And
and he's like, okay.
he's so chill about it.
He takes it. I'm like, what is going on with Bill Pullman? It's his allergy medication. It's affecting his emotional response.
Yeah. So then she goes to the Empire State Building, and then Sam is arriving there around the same time to get Jonah, but they like just miss each other. But wait, Jonah left his backpack. So he and Sam go back, and then they see Annie.
A random lady who could be anyone.
But they're like, are you Annie? And she's like, yeah. So then they hold hands and are in love.
And then there's a bad CGI shot of the Empire State Building. It's so bad. It's really funny. And then we're like, and that is Sleepless in Seattle. It ends in New York. Why couldn't they have chosen a building in Seattle? Is a good question.
The Space Needle.
Realistically, this movie would have ended with Jonah being kidnapped and Tom Hanks living out the rest of his days wishing he hadn't yelled at his son so much. This was more of a Taken situation than anything, but.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Okay, so here's the thing with this movie.
It's an all-female reboot of the stalking trope. I think it's great.
Yes, it feels like a pretty standard, you know, 90s rom-com, you know, upon first glance. But with a few exceptions, which is that unlike a lot of movies where a woman feels like she needs a man to feel complete, or other people are telling her that she needs a man to be complete.
She just needs a different man to feel complete.
Right. Well, this movie is about a boy telling a man that he needs a wife. So that's like sort of a subversion of
right. I mean, and in Jonah's case, it's a cry for help because he's like,
my
hey,
dad.
Can we get anyone else in this house? Like... That seems to be what he's asking.
Did y'all have as much fun with how that kid is like his roommate?
In every Nora Ephron movie, one of the Nora Ephron tropes that is so annoying and is like just the wise child trope. I'm like, this kid would be sneezing on things. He would be sticky. Like,
right. There are a number of scenes where he's like, yeah, women scratch up men's backs during sex. I've seen it on cable.
Right. And then and the message of that is like, whoa, Nora Ephron just roasted cable. You're like, okay.
And then Tom Hanks is like mumbling to himself and he's like, I've fucked seven women in college. And then he sees that his son is right there. And he's like, how long have you been there? And he's like, I've heard you had sex with seven women. And he's like, it was eight, actually. I remembered another one. So he's screaming about all the women he fucked in college.
Also, a whole storyline is like, son, get out of my way so I can fuck someone. He's so annoyed with his son. He's like, son.
It's almost like he could set up boundaries.
No.
He makes no effort. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing good about this movie, but also there's everything good about this movie, so it's confusing. But it's like, we do get to see a male character grieve to some extent. The way he grieves is very toxic and mostly by yelling at his son. There is at least a grieving narrative. I feel like a lot of the time men are not, like, part of we're to believe the reason that women are attracted to him is because he is grieving his wife at all.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, oh, I've got to be with him. If I died, he'd be pissed. Like...
So the real big subversion, the actual huge subversion of this movie when it comes to, like, you know, the rom-com genre is that it's the woman stalking the man this time.
Right.
Which we've hinted at already, but do not
stalk.
No.
Just do not. Unless it's just on Instagram on a fake account that you have. And then stalk away, baby.
Jonas 67.
I just made like a quick list of all the things that she does. She calls around to figure out how to get in touch with the radio show. Then she calls the radio show to get his phone number. She calls his phone number, gets his last name, does a very old Google search / like hacker thing to search for him, figures out that he's an architect.
Because computer said.
Right, right. And then hires someone to do the background check and to take photos of him. Then she flies to Seattle, shows up at his house. He's not there. She follows him on his boat, lurks around nearby, you know, watches him, A day passes, does the exact same thing where she follows him on a boat.
So what I'm hearing is she has a lot of agency.
Yes.
So it's good.
Right. She sounds very independent.
Yeah. Uh-huh. She's a very active character.
Really
she's
brave.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and the subtext to why women are lusting after Tom Hanks, a man who is truly doing the bare minimum of grieving his wife, is that women, I mean, there's this whole subtext to this movie that women would do anything to be shown genuine love from a man, because it's like we see, even though Meg Ryan's character is receiving that for most of the movie, and then she's like, nah, I want a man I know yells at his son.
Right. The idea is that, like, all women, no matter what their circumstances are just like desperate and like horny and just like need a man
and
to the extent that they'll like send letters to a man they've never met.
Something that is brought up a lot in this movie, and I wanted to give some hot context for it, is there is a statistic that is cited several points in this movie saying that, you know, it's easier to get killed by a terrorist than get married after 40. So, does anyone know the backstory for this? Oh,
tell us.
Mensa. All right. So this was a story that was published in Newsweek magazine, where Nora Ephron worked for a long time and successfully sued at one point because they were sexist, which there is a terrible Amazon Prime series about.
If
anyone cares. But there was a cover story that I believe is in the mid-70s published in Newsweek that I think Nora Ephron is trying to comment on in this movie because she hates Newsweek magazine because she sued them. But they published a cover story about how women over 40 were fucked. Like, that was what the story was. It was all false statistics. There was, like, Newsweek later had to retract the story. But even so, because the story came out and came out at a time where apparently everyone was reading Newsweek, there were charts. It was written by, wait for it, all men. And it was saying that, like, single women after a certain point in their life just basically become defunct. And there was this chart that said, like, you're more likely for this to happen. You're more likely for this to happen. And the more likely to be killed by a terrorist thing was the thing everyone remembered. So what Nora Ephron is trying to do is roast Newsweek, because Nora Ephron, if you're a fan of hers, is notoriously very petty, which is why I love her. Nora, if you learn anything about her and then watch one of her movies, you're like, there she goes again. She can't let anything go. She's... which I can relate with. In any case, that's why that is, like, cited in this script over and over, even though they don't make that clear. It's weird because it's like we first hear that statistic said by Meg Ryan's male coworkers.
Yes.
Right? And then Meg Ryan, every time it's said, the woman in this scene says, that's not true, because they're supposed to be Nora Ephron's pettiness. and they're right. It's not true. But I feel like there's a few different male characters written into this script that are, like, cartoonishly misogynist,
right,
so that Meg Ryan will look chill, which she's not.
Yeah, I feel like the movie makes an attempt to show any man who says this statistic to, like, show them to be, you know,
stupid,
yeah, you know. Then, like, Victor Garber, who, Titanic connection.
Hot. Victor Garber is so handsome.
Well, like, Rita Wilson's character is like, that's not true. That statistic is not true. And then he's just like, yeah, okay. And my read was like, the movie's trying to make them seem like idiot assholes. But I don't know. It felt like it wasn't.
Because even so, like, every time it's employed, the female character is like, that's not true, but she's still made out to look ridiculous. Because the scene where Rita Wilson's like, that's not true, she's still sobbing about what sounds like a very troubling movie.
Right. Yeah, the men, they're made to seem like idiots, but at the same time, the women in the movie are all portrayed to be like, I need love from a man, or more love from a man, because we've got Meg Ryan's character, who is in a committed relationship that seems to be caring. But then she's like, but he's not good enough and I need more romance from a guy.
In most Nora Ephron movies, her vibe is very much like, I'm going to make men and women equally irrational and neurotic and impossible to understand their rationale for everything. And that's true equality. Is everyone's out of their minds.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Everyone's yelling at their son. Just Tom Hanks is yelling at his son.
Okay, his son spends time yelling at him. His son's a roommate. His son is not his son.
His son is 40.
His son is 40. They're like sitting in an egg-shaped chair listening to the Beatles backwards. Do you like glance over most of the things that like a 50-year-old would do with a person he met from a record store? Because that's a good portion of this movie.
I do like that Jonah's like best friend is a girl, because I feel like there's not that much representation on screen of like, you know, a young boy and a young girl being friends. So
and she
that was
and
nice.
She also is like smart, and you know, although she also sobs at this troubling movie,
she's also a hacker as well.
She knows how to get the tickets. She's basically like 93 StubHub. Like, she knows how to get the tickets and how to get him on the plane, and she sets up the whole itinerary, and then she's like, okay, time to die probably. Like, and then she withholds information about where he is that he certainly dies.
But the movie has a happy ending.
Feminist icon Jessica.
One of the big things I noticed about this movie is that the characters within Sleepless in Seattle are very influenced by other media and other movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Cary Grant version of An Affair to Remember gets referenced a lot. Annie says something like, you know, she's watching it and she's like, no, those were the days when people knew how to be in love. And Rosie O'Donnell's like, you're crazy. It's a movie. Like, that's your problem. You don't want to be in love. You want to be in love in a movie. But this movie, Sleepless in Seattle, is like the exact same thing. It's still like a romance movie where we're all tricked into thinking that love is real when we watch it.
Dark,
Caitlin.
Oh my god.
So, An Affair to Remember, I did a deep dive on. So, An Affair to Remember is an important part of this movie. It's like where the construct of the Empire State Building and the Valentine's Day comes from.
Right.
But also, like, it turns out there's a lot of stuff that's from the movie, including like somebody being creepy and taking pictures of them.
Mm.
It doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
No.
Surprise. A movie from 1957 doesn't pass the Bechdel test. And it's actually a remake of another movie called Love Affair from 1939.
Oh, weird.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a Star is Born, basically. Just they keep remaking it.
Mm-hmm. But here's the important part. So the important part is in the movie, the women cry over it, and then the men mock the women for crying over the movie An Affair to Remember,
mm-hmm.
and get teary-eyed and fake upset about the movie Dirty Dozen.
Yes.
So I take hormones, and there becomes a period between my dosages of hormones when I have the most amount of testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
So I manned up. I had a beer. I watched football.
Yeah.
I ate a pizza. Then I watched Dirty Dozen.
Okay.
And it was all right.
Yeah.
This is going to be another shock. It doesn't pass the Bechdel.
What?
I know.
Are the Dirty Dozen not all women?
The longest a woman's on screen is someone getting stabbed.
No.
cool.
You know.
A feminist text, then.
But,
yeah.
But then to try and, again, with a hypothesis, I had my dosage of estrogen,
mm-hmm.
and then I watched An Affair to Remember.
Okay.
And I think I timed it wrong. It just, like, put me to sleep. It was just... There's a couple, musical numbers. There's musical numbers in all the other Affair to Remember remakes.
Okay.
Got it.
And it's quasi-racist.
Sure, of course.
Cool.
But the only other thing to let you know is there's another remake of An Affair to Remember that's an Indian one. Mm-hmm. So there's a Bollywood version of An Affair to Remember.
Whoa.
Called Mon, and that one's 3 hours long. I watched that one. Sober.
Andy, why?
It has four dance numbers, whoa, and they're all good.
Yeah.
It passed the Bechdel test. But then I have a new test, which is finding the movies that are 3 hours long but still somehow don't pass the Bechdel test. Like, there are more than a few, but I was... Yeah. Yeah, that was my research.
Oh my God.
Thank you.
WikiLeaks. That was crazy.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
So, An Affair to Remember did not make you cry like it does all of the women in this movie.
You know, I mistimed it because I ended up, like, watching, my roommates were watching, like, Steven Universe the next day, and I was, like, in tears. Like, I get in tears over the most ridiculous things, like, uh-huh, when I have a head full of estrogen.
So. Thank you for... this deep dive that you have this done.
This is why.
And this didn't help you at all.
No, this is very good context for the conversation we're going to have.
That was content. I loved it. I just don't understand. In movies so often that are like referencing older movies, they kind of keep continually saying like, this is when love was real, back when women couldn't vote. Like, they're like, it's like we see all these female characters longing for a time when they had less rights. And
then this movie kind of reinforces the idea that, like, there are certain movies that are women's movies and there are certain movies that are guys' movies. Because, like, the women are all crying over, including, like, Gabby Hoffman are crying over, yeah, An Affair to Remember. The men are making fun of them. They're saying, oh, Dirty Dozen is what I like to watch.
Yeah, I like Dirty Dozen and Coming. My name is Victor Garber. It was like, ew. Victor Garber is, this is the only role I've ever seen him in that I was like, oh, how could you? Like, he.
Legally Blonde.
Yeah. What? he's hot in that movie, though. It's like, he's not. So I forgive everything. In this movie, he was wearing an outfit that I was like, I could take or leave this look. And he was being horrible. So
I did like the constant acronyms from the kids. Like H and B. Hi and bye.
Why didn't that stick?
And then there's the weird part where like Jonah is talking about reincarnation. And the possibility of reincarnation and how he could be reincarnated from another plane.
I'm like, this kid is on mushrooms. He's listening to Beatles records backwards and talking about reincarnation.
It's probably that we like find out that he's 36 and adopted. And we're just seeing him from an outside perspective.
One more thing where a character is influenced by a movie is Sam talks about Fatal Attraction and how it scared the shit out of him. He's like, it scared the shit out of me and every man in America. And he cites that as a reason to not go and meet Annie in New York City.
Which doesn't make sense because it has nothing to do with Fatal Attraction. And you can literally, it was just so dumb of like a line that it's like, remember that movie that's semi-recent? And so the movie practically like pauses for laughs. Everyone could be like, Fatal Attraction, women who want careers are scary. but it has nothing to do with Fatal Attraction.
It's the same punchline that's like, this is at a time when the Crying Game is still used as a punchline for reveal about a trans woman. Like this is a big time, like Crying Game. And like we're supposed to laugh.
There were so many.
Get it?
Or it's like no.
Yeah, there were so many like trans panic movies from the like Silence of the Lambs, and then earlier was Sleepaway Camp. Like
Oh,
I haven't seen that.
There's a line where Rosie O'Donnell says the following: "The guy could be a crackhead, a transvestite." That'd be trouble.
Jesus.
Oh no, there's more work to do.
Yeah.
This is still in the middle of like trans women are dangerous. This is like the hot part in the 90s like, yeah, we're now we're in danger. How progressive.
Right.
Can we talk about the map graphic that seems to happen? It's like you can you can go to the bathroom and then come back and it's still going across.
I think that was like first of all, this movie, it does take place in too many cities. So I found it helpful. And I kind of like when movies are like, let's assume everyone seeing this movie is an absolute idiot. And they like can't remember that, because I am that viewer and it was helpful for me.
I don't know how worth it is to talk about this, but there is discussion of like the changing landscape of dating that the Sam character has to deal with.
Oh yeah.
Because like Tom Hanks and Rob Reiner's characters are talking about, you know, like Sam's got to get back out there.
The boys are getting some brews and they're talking about the chicks.
There is a moment where we alluded to this earlier, but they talk about Tom Hanks's butt. And I feel like a lot of movies would like, especially from this era, would have taken that opportunity to do like, no homo. I don't know if you're attractive or not. Like,
but Rob Reiner's like, I think it's a good butt. And Tom Hanks says, thanks.
Yeah. I thought that was genuinely cute.
Yeah, I did too. Like,
even upon rewatching, I thought it was very cute.
I was like, all right, you got me.
Right. But then Rob Reiner's like, well, nowadays you split the check with your date. And then Sam's like, I don't think I could ever let a woman pay for dinner. So he is not a feminist icon.
Right. But also, if a man is like that, like, take his money. Like, so... Like, if a guy gets all fucking scary white knight, he's like, no, madame. I was like, all right, fine. I will get more. Like, dipshit.
And then he works up the nerve to call Victoria, who is called a hoe in this movie like 40 times. Like,
treated so terribly.
Yeah.
She did. nothing wrong.
Right.
No. All she did is enjoy herself.
Yeah.
She just giggled here and there when Tom Hanks made a goof. It's
the same like treatment if you like go back and watch an episode of Seinfeld, you're like, that person just has one thing that makes them quirky and they're exaggerating right. it so much as a reason to like break up with them.
Yeah.
And
yes.
that's like one of the things that I saw that Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan's character actually had in common is that they would write off what seems like a positive relationship based on one thing, such as laughing or allergies.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, they deserve each other. They're horrible.
They're both basically George Costanza. Yes.
Like, I'm fine sleeping in a room with a humidifier. Like, that's not bad.
That's kind of, that can be rather nice.
Who doesn't like a rainforest?
Well, yeah, I feel for Victoria in this movie because she truly seems like she really likes him for quite some time. It seems like he likes her as well, but yeah. it's like Jonah just goes rogue. Like he's just, he hates her. It is so unclear. He just is like, no, I want scary lady now. And like... He just goes totally rogue. He's on mushrooms, though.
The kid goes full incel.
He does.
Because then, whenever he does work up the nerve to call Victoria and, like, ask her out, that phone conversation, we only hear Sam's side of it, but it's clear that, like, she's calling all the shots. Like, she's deciding where to go to dinner, what time they're going to go. They're going to meet there rather than, like, him picking her up. And, like, her being just a decisive woman who knows what she wants is... framed by the movie as being like, oh no, she's scary and weird. So I didn't like that.
But she, yeah, it's like she's truly just out here trying to have a job and a relationship. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Leave Victoria alone.
But then she says like, oh, I'm so glad you called me. I thought you were never going to call. And it's like, call him.
I hope she and Bill Pullman met each other because that's a lovely story.
Yeah. Is it me or does Bill Pullman look like Face from the A-Team for most of the
time? I don't know.
I'm not really. This is peak Bill Pullman for me.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he's firing on all cylinders here. He's about to reach peak Bill Pullman, which canonically is Daddy and Casper. That is... His character, it sucks because he truly did nothing wrong, but it's just like any, I don't know, in some ways I feel like it's punishing him for any sort of gentleness and like making out gentleness in a man to be emasculating and a weakness and something that Meg Ryan seems to find completely repulsive is that when he is affectionate towards her, she's like, ugh, and she gets in the closet with her radio and or you know the fact that he has any illness makes her you know and it I don't know it's just so bizarre the way this character is treated, but Victoria is treated much the same way of like she's doing nothing wrong, she seems to be invested in the relationship and they're just both treated like dog shit.
Yeah.
But the thing with Bill Pullman's character is that scene at the end where Meg Ryan, can you imagine someone you are about to marry sits you down and says, okay, so there's this radio show.
On Valentine's Day.
It's literally like if someone in this audience, like if there's a couple here who's about to get married and then one of you sat the other one down and is like, so there's this podcast called The Bechdel Cast.
I was going to update it further. It's like, so I met somebody on Snapchat.
Or, okay, it's like, okay, if I say I'm getting married, I sit the person I'm getting married down and I'm like, listen, I heard this show called The Joe Rogan Experience. And I have to marry Joe Rogan today. And my partner was like, I totally understand.
We've already figured out the wedding favor is going to be a DMT.
Yeah. His reaction is so accommodating that is he on mushrooms? I just feel so badly for him.
There could be a super cut of all of the partners of the different main couples across these movies just totally peacing out from the relationship, totally amicably. Yeah. And it is ridiculous. There are different levels of like, no, go ahead. Yeah.
I just want you to be happy. It's like, no one wants Meg Ryan to be happy.
What's the alternative? He like captures her and he's like, you're mine.
No, I think the alternative is like, okay, this fucking sucks. But if this is what you have to do, I guess fuck off. Like, he could speak to her as if he were frustrated.
Sure.
What she's doing is obnoxious and unhinged. Sure. So there is a weird trope that I need. If you have more examples of this trope, please shout it out. But ghost of his wife trope appears in this movie. It also happens in Casper with ghost daddy Bill Pullman. The only person hotter in Casper than Bill Pullman is Bill Pullman's ghost. During the part where Bill Pullman's a ghost. But Tom Hanks's wife comes over. She's in a nightgown. She's got a glass of wine. And Tom Hanks is just like, I miss you, my wife. And she's like, it's okay.
But we agree that they're like in Seattle by that point, right?
Yeah. Yes. The ghost had to get on a plane.
Like the ghost came with them. Like, it's an old chest of drawers she died in. And they're like, I know this fell on her and killed her, but let's just keep it around.
That was just like a weird extension of the his wife trope. Is like she just came to deposit a piece of wisdom and to basically give him permission to fuck Meg Ryan at some point.
Right.
Which is, you know, I mean, she was already, her headstone has already been yelled at by Tom Hanks. And to add insult to injury, they got to fly her ghost out to Seattle to say it's okay to hook up with Meg Ryan.
I don't find that trope to be that troubling.
I just think it's bad writing.
Yeah, sure. But there are certainly more regressive tropes around.
I think it's
dumb.
I think it works in movies that are like supernatural, I guess. But then again, like you end up with something where a wife has to die to be some sort of mechanism for the movie moving forward.
Right.
Yeah. Like some woman has to die.
Yeah.
True.
And I mean, Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan both need kind of just to continue acting as they're acting throughout the movie, which is irrationally. I feel like they add in characters to give them permission to act that way. I think Rosie O'Donnell's character is used like that a lot, mm-hmm. where sometimes Meg Ryan will call her and just be like, is what I'm doing unsafe and irrational? And there's like a scene where Rosie O'Donnell's like, somehow no. And Meg Ryan's like, sounds good. Hear that, audience? It's fine. Click. Like, it's just so fucking weak.
I will say Rosie O'Donnell is like, she's almost cast like a quasi Ricky Lake in the role, and she nails Baltimore. Like, that is a Baltimore attitude in a kind of Kurt Blunt way. Mm-hmm. And I give them props for that. But then again, like, that newspaper would just be covering murders.
There's like, more going on in Baltimore.
No, there's a lonely man in Seattle. Sorry, this corpse just washed up in front of your house. Because we found corpses in front of our house. I worked right there. And they would just like have to shut off our work because just find bodies.
Oh my God.
Not necessarily murders, just like, you know, a corpse.
Sure.
Of course.
That died of natural causes?
You know, a drug person falls in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, as we know from the Jinx, that corpse that washes up,
feminist
that was not a murder.
The Jinx.
That was Robert Durst self-defending himself.
Yeah, you dismember your neighbor in self-defense.
Anyway.
He's innocent. And then our other female character that we see semi-frequently is Sam's sister, played by his wife.
And we don't really know that much about her, except that she's sort of used as like an exposition machine, basically, to be like, hey, you should move to, I don't know, Seattle. I mean, she just sort of functions in relation to the
first,
Sam.
Yeah, the first thing that she says is, here's how to make food, because women be cooking. and then later, that long scene where she is recapping the movie of an Affair to Remember and crying during it. So at least I don't do that as I'm recapping movies on the podcast.
But I am Victor Garbering the whole time.
Is there a movie you would cry as you recite back the
Paddington 2? Maybe I'm just like an emotional robot, but describing a movie doesn't make me cry. Does that happen? Do people cry when you describe a movie?
I don't think people describe movies to each other very much. I think we just do that.
But I think that's one of the things with this movie. Like, women are just shown as being so emotional that, like, the thought of a romantic story will make you just cry for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's stupid.
Yeah. So,
but also, I cry constantly at the drop of a hat about many things.
Okay.
However, the description of that movie sounds just like, oh no.
I will say, in the middle of Mon, the 3-hour Bollywood version essentially of this movie, there becomes a part where the female lead starts washing the feet of the grandmother in the temple. And I got teary-eyed during that.
Okay.
That's where that it makes passes sense. The Bechdel test, too.
Oh. I mean, crying during a movie, I think, is normal. But crying while
during
describing a
movie,
yeah, that, I don't know, not to shame anyone who does that, but I feel like that just doesn't happen very often. But all the women shown in this movie are constantly talking about An Affair to Remember. Even like the security guard at the end is like, oh, yeah, I'm at the Empire State Building and you're trying to go up to the roof. Just like that movie. It's my wife's favorite. Like,
yeah.
You could have easily been like written that so that
it was his favorite.
But nope. That's there are true. Boy movies and like, there are girl movies.
Only. I mean, well, boys, as we all know, should be listening to Beatles records backwards and being yelled at by their fathers.
Do we have any other final thoughts?
No, this movie absolutely blows. Don't watch it.
Should we take some questions, comments from the crowd?
Any QCs?
Anyone? Oh, yeah. Come on down so that you're talking into the mic. Yes, mm-hmm. You.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention my favorite scene in the movie where half the cast is yelling at Gabby Hoffman about where that annoying kid is. And her father walks up and introduces himself saying, this is your father speaking. Like explaining who he is to her.
Yes.
I just wanted to know your thoughts on that.
I hope that that was them meeting for the first time. He's like, listen, I was called in after 9 years. How old are those kids?
Like 8, 9? Yeah.
40.
Yeah, I think that was them meeting. Canon.
Yeah. Yes.
I thought it was interesting. I don't want to know your thoughts on this, that the only attribute that the child Jonah gets to learn about his mom is that she could peel an apple like in one whole strip, and that somehow is the, like, I don't know. That was just weird.
That is,
I thought.
Thank you for bringing that up, because that is, first of all, so specific that hearing it said out loud, you're like, ew? And then just to be sure, you also see Meg Ryan do it, and then you're like, ew. No one would do that, ew. Why is she so handy with a knife? Why is
it's
like seeing it's, this stalker character use a knife handily is like, yikes.
That's like in all action movies when somebody's like peeling like an apple with a Bowie knife, you know,
yeah,
they're gonna be the one to stab somebody.
Yes, right. Like that seems like it's an omen.
Right.
When she's like listening to him on the radio and is like, it's like she's thinking of that as like his skin.
And she's crying during that scene too, because women be crying all the time.
But not so hard they can't see their knife. Like,
When I couldn't
Thank you for bringing that up.
When I couldn't sleep, Mom would split wood with a hatchet she sharpened on her foot.
Any other questions, comments?
Yeah. So I just need to get this off my chest because I'm super embarrassed about this. Yes. I've seen this movie once years ago. Mm-hmm. I remember nothing about it before coming to the show. But this was like my partner and my like movie that we watched on our first date. And I guess we found this like romantic enough to like still be dating like 4 years later. But we started like, oh, Sleepless in Seattle. And I'm like, oh my God.
Brave for sharing.
Yes.
Story.
Is, let's applaud this bravery, please. Thank you. You're a hero.
Do you have any couple movies? Like the movies you have as a in your relationships or?
I think I've told this anecdote on the podcast before, but in one of my worst relationships ever, it started with the gentleman, if you can call him that. Okay, I went over to his apartment. I was like 19 or 20, and he was just like, I love Drive. Ever seen it? And I was like, no. And he was like, let's watch it. I have it in the DVD player already. He had Drive queued up. And then we were watching it. I personally think that movie is a fucking drag. Was not enjoying it. And then he was just, you know, like, there's a scorpion jacket in the movie. And he kept looking over. He's just like, that jacket's cool, right? And I was like, I guess. And 20 minutes later, he was like, I have that jacket.
Okay, but that's also the jacket. They, what is it? Somebody help me out here. It's the jacket also in a gay cruising movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a really famous jacket, like a Scorpio Rising jacket.
Oh, wild. I didn't know that.
I'm forgetting the name of it, but it's from
it's
a gay...
It's like a reference to something?
Yeah, it's a gay cruising jacket.
Hell yeah.
So he's like, I have the jacket. He pulls the jacket out of his closet and just leaves it next to me suggestively. And then 20 minutes later, he's like, I've always wanted to make out while a girl's wearing that jacket. And then I dated him for 3 years. Oh my God. That's, I'm a feminist icon.
I've never been in a relationship, so I have no movies. I'm in a relationship with myself, and our movie is Paddington.
Hell yeah.
Oh, I know. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you think I didn't know that Paddington 2 was better?
I still haven't seen Paddington.
Caitlin made me watch it on Christmas, so...
I saw the first one by myself, and I enjoyed it.
It's so
it's
good!
They're great! They're great!
I think me and my partner, ours is just the... It's really just the seventh season of Simpsons. Because you have to decide, if you're in a long enough relationship, you have to decide which season of The Simpsons you agree is the best. I can tell you right now, it'll help you. We've been together for 17 years.
Hell
whoa!
Yeah.
So yeah, wow. You find a season that we liked season 7.
Okay. Beautiful. That's a beautiful love story.
Gang, does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
Well, there is a quick exchange toward the beginning where Annie's mom is holding up a dress. And so they talk about this dress back and forth for a couple lines. But the rest of the conversation is about Walter and about Annie's dad. And the context is like, here, take this dress so that you can marry a man.
Right, yeah. So you can marry Bill Pullman.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it passes at all.
Yeah, so, every other exchange either...
I thought there was an exchange between Meg and Rosie where they're talking about a Polaroid commercial and there's something about a refrigerator.
Oh.
I wasn't fully listening. This movie's very boring. But yeah, I know they're not talking about a man. They're talking about some commercial.
I missed that one. But there are a number of exchanges. There aren't as many as you would think, I guess.
Because there are a lot of female characters in this movie. They're not really frequently seen interacting with the exception of like Meg Ryan and Rosie O'Donnell.
Right, yeah. And almost all of their conversations are about... a man in Seattle that she's never met, or Walter.
Does it count as a conversation if she's yelling at the radio where Dr. Marcia
I wrote that down
from?
Too! I was like, if she's yelling at Dr. Marcia. No, but also a compelling argument. Does it pass the Bechdel test if Tom Hanks is yelling at a child?
Yes.
I think Alfred Molina could have played
Jonah.
You stepped on my
chair. I'm so sorry.
I think he could have played Jonah, and yeah. I think he could have played Jonah well. And I think if Tom Hanks is yelling at Alfred Molina, who's playing a 9-year-old, we've got a psychological thriller on our hands, and I would love it. So that's, yeah. Also, it tragically passes the Bechdel test.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've seen crazy. Two different readings where it, like, did or didn't pass the test.
Yeah, it's, I will say I did think that that exchange with Meg and Rosie did pass.
Okay. Yeah, that I totally forgot. So that says something about that conversation. Yeah. I've seen this movie 3 times in the past week, and I don't remember that conversation.
So fucking boring.
I watched this movie like 45 minutes ago. I still don't recall.
Yeah. But I guess it passes, so hooray.
So, yeah, it is. So female stalking is fine. It's back.
Well, with that, let's rate it on our nipple scales. Yeah. 0 to 5 nipples based on its portrayal of women. I think that it gets like a half nipple. Women are portrayed as just being these like blubbering, like always crying, like hyper emotional, like no matter what, I need more men in my life. Yeah, the fact that she is stalking and that's not addressed in any way, and it's actually seen as being very cool and romantic.
She's given permission to do it by multiple characters. As so, like, when you do it, it's okay.
Right, like, right. Stevia the movie Buscemi. Subverts the trope of men stalking women, but that's also not good. So yeah, I guess a half nipple because Gabby Hoffman?
Who are you giving your nip to?
I'll give my nipple to, I guess, to Nora Ephron.
Yeah.
Because she did write and direct it. So, I mean, we've got a female filmmaker, but she didn't do a very good job.
I'm going to give this movie a nipple and a half.
Okay.
Because I am a Nora Ephron stan, even though she, you know, mistakes are made. But she did marry Carl Bernstein, and then they got divorced, and then she roasted him nonstop until she died, which was fucking incredible. And I love Nora Ephron so much. And that has nothing to do with this movie, although, you know, she's clearly the person driving it. But it's weird. I think the kind of a recurring problem throughout her movies is that she kind of tries to have it both ways a lot of time, where all her female characters are very active, but what they're active doing, you're like, oh no. Like, they're, I mean, we can't deny Meg Ryan's character is active as fuck because she is committing crimes, you know? Like, she's actively stalking someone the whole movie. She's trying to subvert things at times that I think miss the mark with, like, every time a woman, you know, refutes, like, no, that terrorist statistic is wrong. But then she's also kind of made to look dumb in the same scene, women being blubbering dummies. But they're also hackers. So, you know.
It's true.
There's a lot of mixed bagginess to this movie that doesn't, I don't even think that, like, the female stalker thing is an issue of its time. It's just, like, weird. Okay. But I'll go nipple and a half, and I'll give one to Nora, and I'll give the other half to Rosie.
All right.
Andy? I'm going to give it, considering I'd watched all of the other, there's Love Affair, there's Affair to Remember, there's the other Love Affair from 94, there's the Bollywood movie, and then this, I think... In the oeuvre of all the affairs.
That I wasn't aware existed.
It's the only one where a woman doesn't get struck down in traffic. So can I give it at least one nipple for that?
Yeah, sure.
And I'll give another nipple for the girl Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
And also I'll cross both those nipples for the hopeful sequel that follows Jonah and Jessica as Jonah goes on to create Instagram. And Jessica invents the first Himalayan salt lamp.
Oh. Compelling.
I like that movie.
So, yeah, this movie is boring. And I don't like it. Thanks for coming.
Thanks.
Andy, where can people follow you online? What would you like to plug?
Yeah, I do the Comedy Nest downstairs here in the Grotto every Tuesday. It's an awesome hate-free female-focused show and room.
Great.
Sweet.
All right.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, give it up for Andy.
My coworkers are probably listening to this right now. I'm probably on break.
Hell yeah. Thank you for coming. Give it up for yourselves.
Thank you.
There you have it. That was the last of the live shows that we recorded on our West Coast tour. Thanks again to our guest, Andy Iwancio, for joining us. Thank you to the Jewelbox Theater at the Rendezvous in Seattle and all of their staff for helping us to put on the various shows that we did there in Seattle. Thanks again to Sam Junio for recording the show and being our road dog for the West Coast tour. And speaking of tours, we've got another one coming up in the Northeast. We will be in New York, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., and Boston at the end of April and beginning of May. So check out our website, bechdelcast.com, and click on live appearances for all of the dates, venues, and other details for those shows. And if you live in or near any of those places, we hope to see you there. And then all the usual stuff. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Bechdelcast. Rate and review us on iTunes. That helps us out a lot. Subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/Bechdelcast, where we do 2 bonus episodes every single month, and it's only $5. What a damn good special. And then we've also got merch at tpublic.com/TheBechdelcast, including a few new designs by our very own Jamie Loftus, like Woman in STEM and Rise of the Matriarchy. And that about does it for this episode. So thanks as always for listening. And this is Sleepless in Seattle signing off. Just kidding, it's Caitlin. Bye.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.